Swami Nikhilanand is a disciple of Jagat Guru Sri Kripaluji Maharaj. He resides at Radha Madhav Dham in Austin, Texas, which is the U.S. ashram of Jagat Guru Kripalu Parishad. He travels America preaching the philosophy of Sanatan Dharma as taught by Sri Kripaluji Maharaj. In this series of lectures, Swami Nikhilanand explains the most important topics of the Gita chapter by chapter.
Cheto darpana marjanam bhava maha dava Chandrika Vitaranam Vidya Vadhu Jeevanam Vardhanam Pratipadam Purnamrita Svadhanam Sarvatmasnapanam Param Vijayate Shri Krishna Sankirtanam. Aho Kalakutam Jighansayata Yayadapya Sadhvi Lebhe Gatim Dhātriyuchitāṁ patunyam Kam vā dayālum Sharanam vraje Yo brahmanam vidadhati purvam Yo vai vedanscha prahinoti tasmai Tadvanha devamatma buddhi prakasham Mumukchurvai Sharanamaham Prapadye.
The Divine Souls. We're going to learn about the Gita this week. The Gita is a recorded conversation between Shri Krishna and Arjuna. Shri Krishna is answering the questions and Arjuna is asking the questions. And the scene, the situation where this conversation took place is amazing. And it's perfect for the revelation of this knowledge. Arjuna was a great warrior, the greatest of warriors, and he was about to begin a war. On his side, he had his four brothers, the five of them, the Pandavas, were going to fight against the 100 Kauravas, who also had Bhishma, Pitama, Dronacharya, Kripacharya, and many, many other great warriors on their side. In fact, there were millions of warriors there, standing at the ready on the battlefield. Two huge armies came and met on Kurukshetra, and it was a dharma yuddha, so it followed certain rules, certain regulations. So they met, and then there was a pre-agreed upon time, when were they going to start the war, and then there was a way of starting the war that, you know, first you blow on the conches and beat the drums and sound the horns, then after that you charge. So this war had been years in the making. This rivalry between the Pandavas and Kauravas had been going on since their very childhood. It culminated in this war because there was no other way to avoid it by that point. Shri Krishna tried one last ditch effort, going as a messenger of peace and meeting with Duryodhan with a peace proposal which was extremely generous, to say the least. And Duryodhan threw it back in his face. He said, "No, I'm not even going to listen to you. You have to fight me. I'm not giving the Pandavas anything. You have to fight me in this war." So of course Shri Krishna was on Arjuna's side. He had agreed to be the driver of Arjuna's chariot, even though he wasn't going to lift any weapon in the war. So there was Shri Krishna, with holding the reins of those great horses, and Arjuna standing behind him on the chariot. And on their side, all the warriors who were going to fight with them, and on the other side, all the warriors on the Kauravas side. The drums had been sounded, the conches had been blown, the horns had been blown. It was like a thunder shaking the air, announcing the beginning of the war. And just as they were on the precipice of war, they were about to begin, Arjuna decided that he wanted one last moment of reflection before this war started. So he said, "Senayorubhayor madhye ratham sthapayamechuta." "Hey Krishna, take my chariot in the middle, in between the two armies where I can see both sides. Against whom am I going to fight, and who is on my side? I want to look at them, and I need a moment of reflection." So Shri Krishna took him into the middle. Then Arjuna started to feel confused, and he felt so many doubts in his heart about whether this was in fact the right thing to be doing, to be fighting this war. At this critical juncture, when the war had basically already begun, they had already sounded the conches and beaten the drums, the next thing was just to charge. And before that happened, everybody saw, oh, Arjuna's chariot is coming into the middle, what's going on? So they just waited, and everybody waited and watched. As Arjuna and Krishna continued to sit there in the middle, Arjuna said to Krishna, after having looked into the faces of those against whom he was going to have to fight and try to kill, his great-great-grandfather, Bhishma Pitama, his guru of warfare, Dronacharya, who had taught him how to shoot bow and arrow and all the art of warfare, his family guru, Kul Guru, Kripacharya, many of his elders and relatives, all on the side against whom he was going to be fighting. So seeing that, he had an emotional reaction, and he describes that to Krishna. "Sidanti mama gatrani mukham cha parishushyati vepathuscha sharire me romaharshascha." He says, "My whole body is shaking My hairs are standing on end. My limbs are getting weak. Like his arms are feeling numb, his legs are feeling numb. He says, my mouth is feeling dry. He goes on to say, Gandivam sransate hastatvakchaiva paridahyate nacha shaknomyavasthatum bhramativa chame mana. He says, Gandiv, my bow is falling out of my hands. I feel so weak. So he's having an emotional reaction. His body's shaking. His limbs are feeling weak. He can't even hold on to his bow anymore. His mouth is dry. He says, my skin feels like it's burning. I can't even stand anymore. And my mind, Brahmativa, is completely confused. My heart is in turmoil. And he says, Nayotsya. I'm not going to fight this war, Krishna. He gave some reasons as well. He said, you know, if we fight the war, so many of these warriors will be killed, so then they won't be a part of their family anymore, so then what will their families do? The society will get degraded because of this, and I'll be responsible for all of that. He was thinking in this way. So he said, for all of these reasons, and of course, because I don't want to kill my own relatives, so I don't want to fight. And he threw down his bow and arrow, and he slumped in the back of the chariot, dejected. It's called Vishad Yoga, the first chapter. Vishad means shok. He's worrying, he's grieving about the whole situation in which he finds himself, and he sees no good way out. So he says to Shri Krishna, Karpanya dosho pahatasvabhava prichhami tvam dharma sammurha cheta yachreya syan nishchitam bruhitanne shishyasteham shadhimam tvam prapannam. He admits to Shri Krishna that I don't know what's right and wrong. Right now, I don't know what is dharma and what is adharma. What is the best thing for me to do in this situation? I'm so confused, I don't know. So I surrender myself to you. You are my guru. I am your surrendered disciple. So you please tell me, what is the best thing for me to do? This is the gist of everything that happened before Shri Krishna started speaking. He didn't say a word in the entire first chapter of the Gita. Shri Krishna said nothing. He just listened. As Arjun got everything off his chest, told all his ideas, all his reasoning, told him everything he was feeling. Just like a good friend listens. You don't start giving advice right away. You listen. Let your friend get everything off his chest. Then when he's ready, see, Arjun stated that he's ready to listen when he said, Shishyasteham shadhimam tvam prapannam. He was done talking at that point. He was talked out. And he said, Krishna, I'm yours. You tell me what to do. So that's the whole first chapter. But Krishna didn't say anything, so what is the teaching of the first chapter? Well, there's a lot to be learned from the first chapter. First of all, what is the qualification of someone to study the Gita? We can learn that just from Arjun in the first chapter. See his final statement before Shri Krishna started talking? I'm yours. I'm surrendered to you. I don't know what's best. I believe you know what's best. So you please tell me. That's the qualification. We have to have faith in Shri Krishna. In fact, Shri Krishna at the very end of the Gita, he tells Arjuna, don't tell the Gita to anyone who doesn't have faith in me, who criticizes me. So, the first qualification to learn something correctly from the Gita is having faith that Shri Krishna is Bhagawan. Shri Krishna is God. And we learn that in every chapter of the Gita. Shri Krishna keeps telling about himself. How is he God? What are his characteristics and qualities? His almighty greatness. He reveals that in every single chapter of the Gita. So who is telling the Gita? Who is revealing this knowledge? It's God himself. We have to know that first of all. It's not some author who wrote something. It's Krishna himself. He told Gita. Did he write Gita? No. But yes. You can say, just like an authors nowadays, sometimes they use what we call a nom de plume. It means a name by which they write, but it's not their real name. So they use some other name that they put on the book that they wrote. But their real name is something else. Something like that, Shri Krishna has an alias. It's called Vedavyas. Vedavyas is an avatar of Shri Krishna. In Bhagavatam, there are 24 main avatar described. And out of those 24, Vedavyas comes. He's mentioned. So who is Vedavyas? He is Shri Krishna. So in one form, Shri Krishna told the Gita. And in another form, as Vedavyas, a few years later, he wrote the Gita. At the same time, he was having Ganesh ji write the Mahabharata. At that time, as part of the Mahabharata, he also dictated the Gita. So I guess you could say Ganesh ji actually put pen to paper and wrote the Gita, but it was dictated by Vedavyas, who is a form of Shri Krishna. So it's a word for word. We're so lucky that we have a word-for-word account of the conversation that happened that day. It's not a summary that, it was this big, long conversation, and let's just summarize it, the main points. No, everything that was said is recorded in the Gita. Some people wonder, but how would they have had time to say all of that? If you recite the Gita from beginning to end, it's 700 shlokas. It takes you a few hours. So that means that whole conversation must have taken at least 3 or 4 hours between Arjuna and Shri Krishna. So would the armies have waited that long? Some people write, when they're writing about Gita, that it must have been a very brief conversation where Krishna touched on some main points and later Vedavyasji expanded on those topics. No, I told you it was Dharma Yudh. They had to wait. Neither side was going to start the war until Arjuna went back to his side. Then they were all ready. Then they started after the conversation was finished. So, whatever is written there in the Gita is the actual conversation that took place between Shri Krishna, Bhagawan himself, and Arjuna, his devoted friend, relative, disciple. But we shouldn't think that Arjuna is an ordinary personality either. Just because Arjuna was confused and having an emotional reaction doesn't mean he is like us. He was acting like us. Take it that way. Arjuna is indirectly mentioned in the Bhagavatam also because there's another out of those 24 main avatar. There's one called Nar Narayan. Nar Narayan came as Arjuna. So you can say Arjuna himself is a form of God. Then why was he so confused about the situation? Shouldn't God know what to do in every situation? Sure, of course. But it's a means of revealing the knowledge. It's actually the style in our scriptures. In all of our scriptures, that there's somebody asking the questions and somebody's answering. And both are divine personalities, always. Many of you have read Ramcharitmanas by Tulsidas ji. So in the Ramcharitmanas, who's asking the questions? Parvati. And who's answering? Shankarji, God Shiva. And why did this conversation take place? Because Parvati, before she was Parvati, when she was Sati, she got confused seeing Bhagwan Ram, thinking that, but he's acting like an ordinary man. How can I accept that he's God? Yet I see God Shiva is bowing down to him and saying that he's Satchidananda Brahm. So is he God or isn't he God? She got confused. So then there's a long story behind that that's recounted in the Ramayana. But in the end, she came back to God Shiva and asked, can you please explain to me about Bhagwan Ram? I want to know about him. How is he God? What are his leelas? So because she was asking, therefore God Shiva told the whole of Ram's leelas, which is recorded in Tulsi Ramayana. But God Shiva even says to her, Tum Raghubir Charan Anuragi Kinhi Hu Prashna Jagat Hit Lagi. You are only asking these questions and acting confused for the good of the world. Because by asking them, because of that, I'm going to tell this knowledge and the whole world will benefit because of that. But you already have full love for the lotus feet of Sri Ram. So you don't need to know any of this. But in order to benefit the world, you're asking. So Arjuna is acting like an ordinary person. We have confusing situations in our life where we don't know what is the right thing and what is the wrong thing. We get confused about our duty, how to balance duty and attachment or love and responsibilities when they seem to conflict, as they are in this case for Arjuna. So this whole situation was arranged as a great teaching tool. This is knowledge we need. But instead of just presenting it in a dry way, it's being presented to us through this situation, which you can say draws our mind towards it. We really want to know about it. Oh, what happened? This happened on the battlefield before a war was going to begin. Then Arjuna got confused. It draws our mind to it. We want to know about it. There's more at stake. It's like a critical situation. And through this situation, Arjuna and Krishna are teaching the souls about dharma, duty, responsibilities, bhakti, attachments, desires, all of these topics, karma yoga, everything is covered. Is bahane se, just because of this dilemma which Arjuna was facing. So in the first chapter we understand that the qualification to learn the Gita, the first qualification is to have faith in Krishna, to have faith in the Gita, that the Gita is a real divine scripture which was revealed by a divine personality, Bhagawan himself. The second qualification is just like Arjun, and these two basically go together, that because Arjun had faith in Krishna, he was humble before Krishna. Although he had his own ideas, he had his own confusion. Otherwise, if he didn't have his own ideas and confusion, there would have been no need for Krishna to tell the Gita. He wouldn't have needed to convince Arjuna of anything. He would have just said, no, Arjuna, the right thing for you to do is fight this war, so fight the war. Bas, khatam. There's no need for the Gita. But because Arjuna had his own ideas, so one sentence wasn't enough for Krishna to explain to him why it was the right thing. He needed to tell the whole 700 shlokas, the whole 18 chapters of the Gita. So we're like Arjuna in that way, that we have our own confusions and our own ideas, not only confusions about how to live in the world, but also confusions about God. What is God? There's a scientific philosophy in our Hindu scriptures explaining what is God and what is soul and what's the difference between God and soul and what's the path to God and how can you attain God while living in the world. These are very precisely described in our scriptures, yet we have confusions about that, about what really, what is the correct knowledge. So just like Arjuna does, we have our own ideas and we have our own confusion. And the question for us is, like Arjuna, do we have more faith in Krishna or more faith in our own ideas? Arjuna was at least 51% towards Shri Krishna, meaning he did have his own ideas. But he was willing to admit to Krishna that I'm confused and I don't know what's right, and I'm willing to listen. In fact, I want you to set me straight. I want you to tell me if I'm wrong. So are we at that point? Are we at the point where we're willing to say, I may have misunderstood something about God, about soul, about what is karma yoga, what is the path to God? Are we willing to admit that possibility? If we are, then we're qualified to learn something from Gita. If not, how could we learn? If the glass is already full, you can't put more water in it. You have to empty it out first. So Arjuna at least made some room in his mind. He emptied it out and said, Krishna, I have these ideas, but please tell me if I'm wrong and correct me. So we have to have that humbleness. That's another qualification to study the Gita. Another qualification is, tadbidhi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tattva darshinah. We have to have the guidance of a God-realized saint to correctly learn the knowledge of the Gita. This is from later in the Gita. It's stated in the fourth chapter, where Shri Krishna tells Arjuna that if you want correct spiritual knowledge, you have to get that knowledge from someone who has already attained God. They must also have a thorough knowledge of the scriptures, but just a theoretical knowledge is not enough. They have to have practically experienced God. Then they can give you the correct understanding. Otherwise, it's all just on the level of theory. See, Gita is called Brahma Vidya Shastra. Brahma, God, Vidya, knowledge, and Shastra, scripture. So Gita is the knowledge of God. But that doesn't mean that by reading Gita you can know God. That's important to understand too. Don't think that at the end of this week you will know God because I explained the essence of the first six chapters to you. Or even if we went for a whole 3 weeks and I covered the whole entire Gita, or we went over the whole Gita verse by verse, just by reading it and by studying it, we're not going to know God. Why not? Because God is the subject of experience, not the subject of study. Shri Krishna says in the Vedas, Nāyam ātmā pravacanena labhyo namedhaya nabahuna shrutena yame vaisha vrinute tena labhyas tasyaisha atma vivrinute tanugvam swam. In a very similar verse in the Gita, in the 11th chapter, Bhaktyatmananyaya shakti
प्रत्यवत्य अहमेवं विभोर्जुन ज्ञातुं द्रष्टुं च तत्त्वेन प्रवेष्टुं च परंतप नाहं वेदैर्न तपसा न दानेन न चेज्यया शक्य एवं विभो द्रष्टुं दृष्टवानसि माम् यथा.
Shri Krishna says, both in the Gita and in the Vedas, I cannot be known by studying any scripture, or by listening to any pravachan about me, or by any amount of intellectual speculation, or debate, or meditation. All of that is the effort of your own limited material intellect. But He is divine, so He's beyond the reach of our material intellect. Then how can He be reached? He says, through bhakti. Bhakti means surrender, love. By lovingly surrendering our mind to Him through bhakti, we can know Him. So we can't know Him through our mind, but if we surrender our mind, He gives us the knowledge in our mind.
Dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayanti te.
Shri Krishna says in the 10th chapter that anyone who surrenders their mind to me, I give them divine knowledge. So you can't reach Him, but if you just surrender, He graces you with the knowledge and you reach Him through His grace. So then what is the knowledge of the Gita useful for? Meaning, if the goal is to know God, that we can't know God by studying the Gita or any other scripture, then what is the need or the use of that knowledge? That knowledge is meant to lead us on the path towards God. The path towards God meaning becoming more surrendered, developing more bhakti, developing more love for Him. That is the correct use of the knowledge of Gita or any other scripture. This is probably the most important point I can make today. That knowledge is not an end in and of itself. When it comes to spiritual knowledge, the knowledge is a means of developing love for God. That's it.
Yat karma harito sham yat, tat karma harito sham yat, sa vidya tan matir yaya.
Vedavyasji writes in the Bhagavatam that that is true knowledge which develops love in your heart for God. If it doesn't develop love in your heart for God, then it's not knowledge. It's just empty words filling up space in your mind. I'm talking about spiritual knowledge. An example in the world would be that, let's say you found something that looks like a diamond. You just found it on the side of the road. There was nobody to claim it, so you picked it up, you looked at it, and you thought, it can't be real. There's no way. It must be cubic zirconia, some cheap imitation. You just took it home, put it in your junk drawer. Oh, just something sparkly I found on the side of the road. But a few days later, your friend, who happens to be a jeweler, stops by, and you think, oh, let me at least show it to him, see what he says. So you show him that, he takes out his eyepiece and he says it's a real diamond. Could be worth $100,000. See how your feelings changed? From something you just tossed in the junk drawer, now you take it and you go to the bank, you put it in some careful case and you put it in the safe deposit box and lock it away. What changed? Your knowledge changed. The thing was the same. The value of the thing was the same, but your understanding of the value changed. That's knowledge. So if we have correct knowledge of God, it has to lead to love for God. Otherwise, it's not true knowledge. So the true knowledge has to develop love for God. Meaning, if we understand who Krishna is, If we understand our relationship with Him and we understand what we'll gain if we attain Him, what we'll gain if we reach Him, then we can not help but love Him. This is what Gita is for. Take Gita in this way. That why are we studying Gita? To clarify the goal of our life. That understanding our relationship with Krishna and meeting Him face to face, that is the goal of our life. And the knowledge of the Gita can help us understand why that's our goal and how to reach there. That's what the knowledge of Gita is for. There's no other use of Gita otherwise. You know what? If Gita is taken in any other way, it ends up being damaging. If someone studies the Gita without having that humble desire as their motivation, that by receiving this knowledge, I want to develop my love for Krishna. I want to find out how can I reach Him. If we have any other goal, what does studying Gita do? It just builds pride of the intellectual knowledge we're collecting in our mind, which is not real knowledge because it's not developing love for God in our mind. So we're just gaining some theoretical knowledge, but we're not using it for what it was meant. If we develop love for God in our heart, humbleness has to come side by side. Loving God and being humble are two sides of the same coin. So if we have a humble desire to find Krishna and we desire to study the Gita so that we can find Krishna in this life, then the knowledge we gain this week, it's going to improve our humbleness and increase our desire for Krishna. It's not going to give us pride. But if someone studies the Gita on their own, see, this is coming back to our point that we need the help of a God-realized saint to study the Gita. Because if we study it on our own, never mind that we may or may not be able to figure out the correct meaning of Gita. That's a whole other topic. Even if it is correct, something about studying it on your own gives pride. Learning through a God-realized saint develops humbleness. This is one of the reasons Sri Krishna says you have to learn the Gita from a saint. Tadviddhi. You want to know me, you want to know God, or you want to know Gita? Pariprasnena sevaya pranipatena. You have to surrender to a true saint. So these topics are important to understand, and they're all, you can say, there in the first chapter, sometimes in an unsaid way, meaning just by Arjuna's, through his own behavior, that's what he's showing, that you have to be humble in order to receive the knowledge. Now, I am not a God-realized saint who is able to impart this knowledge to you in the way that a true saint could. But in the absence of a true saint, we're doing the next best thing. I have learned whatever I'm going to share with you this week, I learned from Jagatguru Sri Kripaluji Maharaj. So with that, I'm going to do my best to present this knowledge to you in a way that's helpful to you on your spiritual path, that helps develop love for Sri Krishna, clarifies the path for you, and develops humbleness. So this is the perspective that we should take the Gita from. Our goal is to become like Arjun. In the end of the Gita, Arjun was God-realized. So he didn't just take the Gita like a theoretical knowledge, he actually put it into practice right then and there and became God-realized. With Sri Krishna's grace, of course, he became God-realized. So if we correctly understand the Gita, see, this is another good way to keep from feeling pride that I know something about the Gita. Ask yourself, have I attained God? If the answer is no, then I don't know Gita. If I knew the Gita, I would be God realized. So it means whatever I heard from the Gita, I haven't correctly understood it yet, and I haven't correctly put it into practice yet, because if I did, there would be no delay in God realization. So our goal is to become like Arjun, to actually put into practice this knowledge and become God realized through the grace of Shri Krishna. So after Arjun presented all of his questions and confusion to Shri Krishna, Krishna started talking and he revealed the knowledge of the Gita, which is said to be the essence of the Upanishads. Everything Krishna told, it's not something that you can say, Gita, whatever is in Gita has already been said in Vedas and Upanishad. There's nothing new, actually. It's all been explained in the Vedas and Upanishads already. But what is significant about the Gita is that it gives the essence of that. It's such a short scripture, only 700 shlokas. Whereas Vedas are 100,000 mantras. Upanishads are part of that. When we talk of Upanishads or Ved, it's actually the same thing, but Upanishad is a special part of the Vedas. Veda are actually divided into branches. There are originally 1,180 branches of the Vedas. Four Ved, Rig Ved, Sam Ved, Yajur Ved, Atharva Ved. Four Vedas, and each of those four Vedas has many branches. So all of the branches add up to 1,180. And each of those branches has three sections. So you have the Mantra Bhag, Brahman Bhag, and Aranyak Bhag. Mantra and Brahman are used for Vedic rituals like Yajna. So it's just karmakand. It actually doesn't even have anything to do with finding God. We'll talk more about that probably tomorrow. Why that's there if it doesn't have anything to do with finding God. It's like a preliminary dharma. How someone who isn't desiring God can follow the teachings of the Vedas to make themselves a better person. A large part of the Vedas just relates to that. So mantra and Brahman Bhag are just mantras to be used in Vedic rituals. How are they to be used? All of that is explained. The mantras themselves are in the Mantra Bhag. How are they to be used is in Brahman Bhag. And then Aranyak Bhag, the end of every branch of the 1,180 branches, each one has a section called Aranyak Bhag, which is the Upanishad of that branch. So in fact, there are 1,180 Upanishads. Out of those, a little more than 200 are available today. They're not all available in written form. Just like the entire 100,000 mantras of the Vedas are not available in written form today. But like the Gita, they don't only exist as ink on a paper. Luckily for us, this is divine knowledge. So it exists as a power of God. Ved itself is a power of God. So God transfers that knowledge, I'm talking about in the very beginning, before the Srishti happened, before the universe was created, Shri Krishna gave the knowledge of Vedas to Brahma. He just received it into his divine mind as a power, like a transfer of power. And Brahma transferred that knowledge into the divine minds of the first rishis, the first saints of the earth planet. Later on, it was written into a, you know, book form. But it's that same knowledge which came from Shri Krishna, which eternally resides within him, which is produced in a book form occasionally on the earth planet, whenever required. So those books, may be available in full or available in part, but the knowledge is eternal. It's an eternal knowledge. And the Gita is the essence of that knowledge of the Vedas. So Upanishad is part of Ved, and it's the part that relates to God realization actually. So the first, those mantra and Brahman bhag, they relate to just Karmakand. Whereas the Aranyak bhag, the Upanishads, they relate to how to find God. But that's so extensive and difficult to correctly understand the Vedas and Upanishads. So the Gita just takes all of that knowledge that's scattered throughout all of those branches of the Vedas and just condenses it into one scripture, 700 shlokas, all in the Gita. So the Gita is literally the essence of Sanatan Dharma. Sanatan Dharma originates from the Vedas. Abhyudaya nihishrayasa siddhi sadharmaha. There's a definition of dharma given in Purva Mimansa, which says dharma is the a set of guidelines, a set of rules, practices, that if you follow, you get two things. Abhyudaya and nihishrayas, meaning well-being in this world. Abhyudaya. And nihishrayas, ultimate happiness, meaning you get to attain God. So dharma gives you both. And that dharma is called Sanatan Dharma. And it originates from our Vedas and Upanishads. And the Gita is the essence of that. In fact, it says that if the Upanishads are cows, then Sri Krishna milked those cows and the milk is the Gita. So that's what we're going to be studying this week, is the essence of the Upanishads and Vedas in the form of the Gita presented by Sri Krishna to Arjuna to enlighten all the souls of the world about what is Sanatan Dharma. Eternal path to God. Sanatan, eternal. And Dharma, it's the path to God. It teaches you to become good in the beginning, and ultimately to attain God. So this is what we're going to be studying this week. Keeping in mind that to get correct knowledge, we have to have faith in Krishna. We have to be humble. We have to be desiring the knowledge only to develop our love for Sri Krishna, so that we want to attain Him and we come closer to attaining Him and we learn about the path to attain Him. And then we'll study each chapter, one chapter each day, and we'll just have enough time to understand the main points. I'll cover the most important shlokas of each chapter and understand or share with you the main, most important concepts of that chapter as they relate practically to our life, as they relate to understanding who is God, who are we, what's our relationship to Him, what's the path to attain Him, and how are we supposed to do that while living in the world? Because that's the practical part. How do we incorporate that into our life? You don't become a saint instantly, unless you already did, you know, 99.99% of your devotion in your past life, then maybe you could have such a quick God realization. But actually, most of us have a long road ahead. And I don't say that to discourage you. We have to do it. Whether it's long or whether it's short, we have to do it. That's why we were given a human birth. That's why we're here, to find God. So we are going to do it. But we have to figure out how to do it so that we can keep living in the world and but stay steady on our path and keep moving forward while living our life in the world. So I'll be examining the main points of the Gita from this perspective and then giving you examples how you can apply that, all that knowledge in your life.